question was raised this morning about the mind. This is Parsha Balosha, but it's about the mind. And in fact, that's one of the aspects of the Parsha has to do with what seems to be rebellion with regard to centering around the food. But the Jews were very dissatisfied with seeing it. Part of their complaint was that they're lacking in all these delicacies that they were able to eat in Israel. Anyway, the question arose pertaining to a famous statement which is cited by Rashi that I'm sure all of us learned as children, that the man had the capacity, what did it taste like? It had the capacity to taste like anything more or less that you wanted it to taste like. I remember as a kid, the sense that I had is that, and I'm sure it wasn't something I made up on my own, it was, you know, cultivated, basically, it was put there by my teachers, that was great, you know. As a kid, of course, this kind of a magical phenomenon is very attractive, especially when it pertains to physical pleasure. So the sense that you had was that people would eat the mind, and then they would think, oh, man, well, let's make a wish, that kind of thing, whatever you want. You want it to taste like pizza, it would become pizza. That's the type of idea that I had as a child. The question, of course, is that to be taken literally? How do we deal with a teaching such as this? Because this is not just me, I think everybody in the room was raised with that same type of understanding. According to the plain reading of the Parsha in Balosa, where it says that the Safsa, the David Haiva, they cultivated, so to speak, a lust, a desire. It's a taiva. Essentially, the story is all about taiva, not lust. And they said, Yachilena Basa. They instigated the rest of the Jews, because this kind of thing is contagious. Yachilena Basa, who will feed us meat? And the Chayas Adaga, you remember the fish that we ate in the Tzrayim Kino, the fruit, Eisach Yishuim, Avatichim, the cucumbers and the melons and Kutir, that Solom, the Eshashumim, all different types of onions, garlic. Basically, they were presenting a situation in which they were really lacking things. Right. They were lacking meat, they were lacking fish, then they were lacking melons, and they were lacking things that are hot, so to speak, like spicy garlic and cucumbers. It seems to be a lot of different things over here. They were lacking in variety. Take a look at Rashi on Esau Kishuim. Amar Kishuim. This is on perfect head. Eisach Yishuim, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon said that they ma haman mishkan al achol dover. Why did the man check into anything? Chutz me'elu, with the exception of these. See, now, his statement over here is operating on the premise that the man could have that capacity to transform itself into whatever the person wanted to eat. Because he's asking the question. It seemed that it did not lend itself to transforming into these things that they're complaining about, because if you're going to say that it did, so then what were they complaining about? Nesha hain kushin le manikos, because these things are not good for nursing them. Omen meisha al tofu shum, the butter, the latino, and so forth. So what he's saying is that there was a reason for it, that these particular kind of things are unhealthy, are negative for a nursing woman. You know, the question remains, what about daga? Is that true of all these things? What about fish, melon, what about the meat? But yeah, it would seem that it was really important. You know, because just because it's bad for a nursing woman, why did all the Jews have to be deprived of it? Why didn't, since it seems, according to the simple understanding, is that depending on what you wanted, so then it didn't automatically become a garlic. It just it was up to the desire of the person. So she should not, a pregnant woman, so she should not have a wish to do those kinds of things. Oh, well, In Shemos, in Kazayim, Laman Al, that's the parsha about the man. So it says that they called it man, it was Kazer Adad Lavan, Vitamo, Kitafish of Vivash. And it had a taste of something which had been fried in honey. So you get the sense of some type of a wafer-like thing, a cake-like thing, which had a sweet taste, some honey is sweet. So clearly, the Torah is telling you that it had a pleasant appearance. In Balos, it talks about its appearance. Because the Torah doesn't want to extol the virtue of the man, to draw a contrast, to show you how far away from reality the Jews were. And here they were, involved in this tremendous complaint. It's an amazing reality, it's a Musar Hasker. Because take a look further in Balos. And it's Yata Nafshani Yavesha, in cold. Now our souls are dry out. We're ain't cold. We're lacking some type of a feeling of satiation. Don't feel a man and ain't it. All we have to look forward to is the man. Now there's a key word in that passage. What's the key word? Ain't it. You know, people, there's a saying, you know, his eyes are bigger than his stomach. You know, like the eyes. You know, satisfy the lack of satisfaction of the man was basically in terms of the eyes. The desire, the taiva, because it didn't satisfy the taiva, the part of the person. Now it says, V'yaman kizra gazu, it was like a coriander seed, that's how they translate it. Ke'eno ke'en havdolah, and it had the appearance of a bedolah, for some type of a fine stone. Now, I haven't told her about this yet. Why does it have to tell you that? But by the way, these psukim from Zion, Zion Ches, and text, Zion Ches and text. Who's saying it? Suddenly the complaints of the Jews end and say, somebody else is talking, that's the narrative, so that's God. And Rashi points out as if to say that there's a mechanism over here. Ramon Kizragad, take a look at Rashi on Zion, Ramon Kizragad, Mishon Razu Lawam Azur. The one who's making this statement did not make a previous statement. Because now the money is being extolled. These people that we quoted before were complaining. Yisrael only built the other money named it. The Jews were saying we have nothing to look forward to except the money. Vakarish Baruch Hu picked it in Kotzorah and God caused it to be written down in the Torah. Vaman Kizragad. Kaloma. This is a very important bracket, so to speak, a frame for these psukim. Kolomah, that is to say, Re'u Bari Olam. Take a look, all future generations, whoever comes into existence. Alma Mislonim Bona. What? Take a look at what my children are complaining about. Ramon Kach Pachach Tu Choshe. That is to say that the Torah juxtaposes it. They're making all these complaints, and this is the reality. This is a tremendous Musar Hasker. Well, what do you see from this? What lesson do you learn from this? You see something about human insanity, a certain element of insanity in a person. But a person could be absolutely convinced that they're being deprived, that they're in a terrible, terrible state, a state of deprivation. And when a person feels that way, they're absolutely convinced of the reality. And what the Torah showing is that it's all but nothing, it's absurd. It was a complaint which was purely manufactured due to certain emotions and was completely in their own mind. In terms of reality, they had a very, very good situation. So that a person can begin in a very, very good situation, and because of his distortions, he can actually feel that he's in the worst possible condition. That's the person, therefore, whenever you come under very, very powerful emotions of these types, these complaining kind of emotions, you really have to step aside. And not give into the temptation of just believing your emotions. You have to get some kind of objective judgment, either yourself or other parties. Because the fact that you feel terribly deprived about something could very well be the result of your own emotions, the emotions you bring to the situation, but it's not necessarily in the situation itself. There are many people in this world, that feel deprived and feel that they've missed out, that they been cheated on, and so on and so forth. And if you look at their situation objectively, they have everything they need. And in their own minds, they are like miserable. People look at these people, what are they complaining about? The man is what we're calling on this seed. So appearance, the first thing is that he had a pleasant appearance. See, everything about it conveys a certain pleasantness. Shatru Ambalakshu, the people would stroll and gather. Now why do you have to say that? That is to say that they, in order to get it, it wasn't exactly just outside their door. They had to take a stroll, but neither was it in the mountains where you had to go, you know, or in the jungles. A little stroll, you had to go for a little stroll. Shetuam, the love to, and they'd gather it, easily gather it. The toughen the away time, and they'd grind it. Within the grindstone of the mill, or dochel bandocha, or they'd pound it. So bishlu bapara, and they would cook it. The asu osa ugas, and they'd make it fish. Well, it's actually, puts forward this idea that this is what Yorah says, the Lord of the Lord of Medusa. He didn't actually go into any of these vessels. Oh, the Shtam HaYotama. But the taste of it would change. L'Mitchonen, L'Mitchonen, L'Mitchonen. So Rashi again is working this theme. He seems to take it very seriously. It's still, no, as far as that Chazal is concerned, I don't take it literally. Obviously, we're not obligated to take the statements Chazal made trying to elucidate the Chumash necessarily as being literal. Could be literal, but it doesn't have to be. It seems to me that a simple reading of the text, first of all, it's not what the text is saying. The text is saying that these are the different things that they could do with it. They'd make it into cakes. Then it says, Vayatam Okitam Mishar Hashem. And it had a taste of something which was soaked in oil. And in Shemot, we read, Kitapisha Fidvash. So, there's no contradiction. You know, the Shemen gives it the consistency of being something moist. And the Shemen was the, Dvash meant that it had it was pleasant. It was honey, it was sweet. The red is a kind of machna. This is when we do cover the camp. Loyla, now he gave it a mana. The mana would descend upon it. All of this indicates that it was really an ideal situation. But look how pleasant it was. How easy. In fact, the fact that you had to actually go for a stroll is even better, because sometimes you just wake up and everything's there. You don't really appreciate it. And it's nice. It's nice to have to do something to acquire your needs. But rather than just being, just laying in bed and everything, being fed the whole time. That doesn't satisfy a person either. A person likes to be able to have a certain amount of control or a certain amount of responsibility. But at the same time, the responsibilities were very light. It wasn't so pressure. It wasn't demanding. It was pleasant. It's nice to go for a walk. You gather it together. Walk, it's a little exercise. You find it very easy. You gather it. You bring it back in. And there's a certain amount of preparation. And that's it. So all of your nutritional needs are being taken care of in a very pleasant kind of a manner. That's something which removes a tremendous burden from the patient. So, therefore, if the Jews were in line at that time, if they were really in line with what they needed, with the real significance of what food ought to be, and they weren't concerned about inanu, about the lusting factor, to take something which is physical and to embellish it, to make it into a positive pleasure that you should pursue in its own right, so then they would have been very happy. But due to the fact that they allow themselves to be overcome by tremendous desire, a person who's under tremendous desire, then he can never be happy with the meal. It's a problem that people face in the world. In every area, if a person has a certain fantasy that he's pursuing because it's been somehow or other, it's been put into his mind, indoctrinated from whatever source, whether it be with regard to wealth, pursuing a certain level. ways to show and ways with a girl, it's to show a certain type, a certain ideal image. So then, it's very rare that person, very difficult for that person to have. Because he's just with persona fantasy, which is never, nothing really yet. And the actuality, the reality that he has, will then be pleasing him. Because he always measures it, and it's not just because the thing itself is not good. The thing itself is good, but it's the way the psyche works. You have to make an evaluation. Everybody must evaluate the situation. And the parents can be very upset with their children. Very, very upset. Always complaining about their children. But an outside can come along and say, well, hey, they're just perfectly fine kids. They're good kids. They're intelligent. And they'll just bring out all the complaints. Really, it means that in his own mind, he was looking, he had this idea that his child was going to be some kind of a big star, or a big genius, or, a big doctor, whatever the case may be. Some kind of a success. It doesn't really matter. If that's the case, if that's what he really demands in his own mind, so then this kid doesn't measure up. He's going to be all the dissatisfaction will now cause him to distort his attitude towards the child. But that's a huge problem in terms of life, that if a person doesn't have a clear picture of the reality of what something ought to be, he relates to things from the standpoint of a certain desire that he needs to have a certain lifestyle. So you'll see that people are really considered wealthy. There are people who are really millionaires. They're really considered to be wealthy. So, boy, that's fantastic. And these people are totally unhappy. Why? Because they take that for granted and then measure themselves as millionaires. So for them, they're very poor. It's this very, very subjective type of phenomenon. Very simple. When it comes to the physical, it's very subjective. And the person can't be so mad for Falco, so then that's the lesson over here. That they couldn't be so mad for Falco. If they would have really had a concept of Falco, the reason why a person can't be so mad for Falco, it's everyone, something that everybody keeps repeating. The reason why is not just because the other people that have more, it's because you have no concept of what it is that you should have. Because the only way that you can determine Falco is if you have a proper understanding of the whole place of materialism in your life. Now, if the value system is really materialist based and oriented, so then that becomes the essence, so then it's very difficult. There's nothing thing as chayla, it's more. That's the Esav, by the way. Yeshli ra, a lot. It's always more. It's always relative to what somebody else has. If Yaakov says, he actually called everything. Everything is only possible because after the first day, everything. After the first day, he has everything. You can say, hey, because he knows what he needs. If a person has to go somewhere in his car, and he knows how many miles it is, and he knows how many miles per gallon he gets, so he can go to the gas station and he can say exactly what he needs. He doesn't have to say, just fill it up. You can say, I need 10 gallons. And if he has 10 gallons, he can say, that's it, I have coal, I have everything that I need. You see what I'm saying? Because he knows what his destination is, and this is just a means of getting there. So that's the whole idea of Sameach Chacholko, is that if a person doesn't have a concept of what his real purpose is, so he doesn't have a context in which to fit the materialistic element of his life. That's what most people are just getting more. Always striving for more. If somehow you win a prize, a lottery, and you jump up into a new category, that's like the greatest thing in the world, even though you don't need it. That person will get wildly ecstatic if they come into, they win a lottery. Let's say they're wealthy. Let's say they're a millionaire. And they have enough. Everything, they have enough. And now they suddenly will win a lottery with $100 million, they'll be wildly ecstatic. Well, why? It's like you see how absurd it is. It would be like you have enough for the meal, and there's plenty of food for the meal. And somebody comes in with 100 tons of food. You're going to get wildly ecstatic. Yeah, well, I like that. It doesn't add anything to what I already have. You see? It doesn't add anything. But that's because in this area, you're relating to the thing in a realistic manner. But you have a sense of what it is that you need. But when it comes to life itself, very few people have a sense of what it is that they need. Because the only way you can determine what you need is if you know what the goal is, what the objective is, and you measure it against that. Lacking any real purpose in life, so people take the pursuit of more in the realm of the physical as their purpose in life, then a person like that can never be satisfied. But he mentions that this whole thing was instigated by the air of God. He mentions that in a number of places. The question is being raised, what about the other people that were not the air of God, who ostensibly did not have the emotion? I would say it means, that concept means that there are two different types of defects, or conversely, there's two different levels of perfection. The Erev Rav had a defect. They couldn't adjust to the situation at all. They couldn't adjust to the situation. And the basic idea behind the Erev Rav is that these were not from the Bnei Avraham and Yaakov. These were originally, they were Egyptians, and they were attracted to the Jews, essentially because the Jews had been, you know, victorious, that type of mentality. But it wasn't really because they appreciated the philosophy. So they were in a bit of a problem. They couldn't adjust to this way of life. The others, the ones who were influenced, reached a certain degree of perfection. Now there's one degree of perfection where a person is able to adjust to the situation. However, that requires certain things. That is, as long as he's not being instigated, you'll find that very often, that sometimes a person is able to adapt to a situation, whether it's something that they don't like necessarily, but they can accept it in the family or in the job, in the workplace, whatever it is, and by then they go through it. Well, they can adapt. They can deal with it. They can cope with it. They're coping. But as soon as somebody comes along and gets them going, it can effectuate a complete change of the emotional balance. Yes. There has to be a certain emotional balance. And they're able to attain that emotional balance, and they can stick with it. But then they're still vulnerable to somebody else coming along and effectuating a change in their emotional balance. So that's not the highest level of perfection. The highest level of perfection is where the person has a certain type of a mastery of his own emotion. And therefore, once he's reached a certain decision and he accepts that he's not vulnerable to others anymore, he doesn't care because he sees the reality. He sees the reality clearly, and it enables him to have complete control of the emotions. The Torah is pointing out that idea that people can have not just the dissatisfaction, but this is significant rebellion over here. And regard themselves as being in a terrible situation and being tortured and deprived, when in point of fact they have everything they need. They're a very good situation. I would say that this chazal, I don't think the chazal is meant to be taken literally, because it's very difficult to understand that this kind of rebellion, if that's the case. First of all, the whole idea is strange. That it's a little magical kind of thing. It just seems strange. Well, why would it work that way? It's magical. That God would give you some object to eat, and you just make it worse, you know, you just plug in what you want. I mean, obviously God could do that, it's just, the whole thing seems strange. Doesn't seem to be the way things work. And the Chumash itself tells you about the properties of the man. Why tell you about the properties of the man? If this would be completely of no importance whatsoever, and all you need to know is that it becomes whatever you want it to become. So there really is no such thing as man. There really is no such thing as man. Money is just a springboard for this phenomenon of having anything you want. Also, as we were seeing over here, that it didn't satisfy the desire for meat, it didn't satisfy the desire for other things, for fish, and so on, and it does tell you that it had a taste. Well, why tell you that it had a taste if it didn't have a taste? Therefore, I would say that what they mean by that, My understanding of that chazal is to try and extol the nature of the food itself. That one could read the parsha of the man, and you can have a certain sense of identification with the plight or the complaint of the person. You can, because aside from the fact that we're raised with this idea that the reason why you don't sympathize with them is because you really internalize that idea that it can become anything you want it to become. So then you can't, obviously, if you take that literally, then you can't have any sympathy for them. That's what's more about. However, I would say that would be a question. If that were the case, then who would get a complaint? Why would anybody complain if he's given a pill, so to speak, this magical pill, and when you eat it, it turns into anything you want? I would say that the Chazal is addressing what might be, you might have a legitimate complaint. That is to say that no matter what food it is, Adam is different than animals. Animals basically don't need variety. You can provide some kind of a dish or whatever it is, you know, which has their basic nutrients, and they'll eat the same thing endlessly. Of course, animals like dogs can be spoiled if you're feeding them integrity. It's true, they'll be spoiled, but if you stick with dog food, and you don't give it, you don't spoil it with treats, and certainly with table food, so it goes with the same stuff, the day in and day out. The need for variety is something that probably a human psychs psychology. Look, I'm not an expert on all different forms of animals, and maybe there's some variation on other animals, but I would tend to think of that the way it is. It's just a matter of satiating hunger. With Adam, it's more than that. So therefore, you could say that a person, even if it was a very nutritional phenomenon, if he could eat the same thing all the time, it's going to bother him. It's going to significantly bother him. Because he's going to get tired of it. So we see from the fact that he'll get tired of it, that eating is not like taking a shower with soap. You know, you're not going to get tired of eating the same soap anymore. It's a different kind of experience. And it has to be pleasing to the palate. So therefore, you might think that how would he be supposed to subsist on the mind and be happy when it's just the same thing time and time again? That's why the passage indicates that it was amenable to being made in different ways, in different textures, in different tastes. It had that capacity so that the desire of a person for variety would be satisfied as well. I think that's what they were trying to say. And that's how I understand it. But that's all. Even with regard to variety, a person has to moderate himself. They couldn't moderate themselves. Endless variety, and again, descending into the world of lust and delicacies. They want the delicacies, meat and fish and melons. The need for delicacies is something which they were expected to be able to overcome, to raise themselves to a higher level beyond that. That was, the monk was really a test for that. It was really a training. You see, in Shemaz it says, are they going to live the life of Torah? The life of Torah is essentially that the real enjoyment of a person, the real anah, comes from Torah. And the physical is essentially it's rooted in necessity. In the course of necessity, that's true, you have to have a certain amount of enjoyment, a certain amount of pleasure. Obviously, you can't be deprived, but that's minimal. That's not the essence, that's just an accident, the byproduct. They took the gratification of the palate, the desire for delicacies and all kinds of taste, they made that into the essence of our food. That was the fate of the situation.